Hi, everybody. Welcome back once again. This is Mark Lawrence, and we're all set to go against the spread on this, the final Against the Spread podcast until the 2024 football season. We're back in July. We've got a jump tap for you. We're going to always do the info from thelogicalapproach.com. Tony Mejia, a playbook expert and a contributing writer for Sporting News. Our executive producer, Greg DePalma from Crime Sports, and also leading off the show will be Jordan Reed from uwager.lv. And today, guys, we're going to talk about the because Greg is a big contributor to the draft with the our lads draft preview guide, which is absolutely the best bar none out there. So we're going to get Greg's opinion there that way as well. And we're also going to close out with a little bit of a preview of the 2024 football season from both the college and the NFL football perspective sides. So a big, big show we've got on tap for you today. And as always, our show is being brought to you by our good friends at uwager.lv, the only offshore sports book that I, Mark Lawrence, personally endorse. You can also pick up free same-day payouts at uwager.lv. Give them a call toll-free. The number is 1-800-UWAGER or log on at uwager.lv. And with that, Jordan, I'm going to welcome you into the show. And I want to check with you, first of all, now that the March Madness is in the rearview mirror and the NBA playoffs are here now, the NFL draft is gone. As a football fan, were you excited about the draft? Was there anything that happened that caught you off guard, particularly aside from, let's say, the Michael Penix thing, because I think that was the obvious, Michael Penix being drafted where he was. But all in all, your take on the NFL draft?
That was the easiest one, Michael Penix, right? Yes, the NFL draft was really exciting. We took draft props on it, got some calls. I thought the draft went really, really well. I think Bo Nix going, 12th overall was a little bit surprising as well. As always, the quarterbacks get pushed higher up the board, but them waiting so long on a defensive player, that was another one that I found a little bit surprising. And, of course, the Dolphins, I felt like they got a little cute with their selection.
Well, is that a little bit of a Dolphin love for you on your part? Do you like the Miami Dolphins, or was that just an opinion without politics involved?
No, I like the Dolphins for sure.
I understand.
You can tell from behind me.
I get you totally. I'm down here in Miami, so I get exactly what it is that you're saying. And just a little sidebar note to our listeners out there. This is a great little stat that I came across. With Caleb Williams going as the first quarterback in the draft, this was reported that over the last 24 times the first quarterback in a draft has made his first start as an NFL football quarterback, those teams are 3-20-1 outright in those football games. We don't know yet who the Chicago Bears are playing in their season opening game. We know their opponents. We just don't know the schedule as of yet. But keep that stat in mind, 3-20-1, a big hurdle for Caleb Williams to have to overcome, at least in that first start, to say the least. Jordan, I know there's some football props that are out there now, and hundreds of more are going to come as we get closer and closer, obviously, to the football season here for the 2024 season. Which of those do you feel are the nuts? A prop out there that a person should not overlook as far as betting props goes, maybe either from a value standpoint right now or for something that you yourself particularly like?
With free agency being over and we get the Super Bowl odds and the division odds coming out now, and you already, with free agency in the draft, you know who the teams are going to be essentially. So it's a really good chance to jump on some of the early Super Bowl numbers even before the schedule comes out. And I like a lot of different plays there. I mean, I generally take dogs with these early numbers because you don't know who they're going to be. The Jets, for one, you can get the Jets at plus 2,700 to make the Super Bowl. I like that. Or to win the Super Bowl, I'm sorry.
Well, you mean Aaron Rodgers to make the Super Bowl is what you mean, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Well, if he lasts that long, right?
I understand. Go ahead. I'm sorry. The Jets, and was there anything else?
I mean, I like the Jets for sure. I like the Lions as well, plus 1,300. That's a good one. And then Chiefs, 49ers, pretty safe bets to get back there. Not, I mean, there's no safe bet in this, but they're your lower odds, right?
They are. I guess you'll be pushing the envelope a little bit with Kansas City, looking the three-peat for the first time ever in National Football League history. But is the prop you're looking at for them to make the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl? Which way are you looking at that?
Well, what I'm looking at right now is to win the Super Bowl, but I like the division and to make the Super Bowl props as well.
And it also appears that, and we'll talk about this, that Kansas City enhanced themselves in the draft. They did pretty well, especially, I think, in the first round when they did just that. Are there any special offers? I know we're going into offseason here. We're going to be coming up on pro football before we know it. August is going to be here for preseason football. And what are some of the advantages people have when they log on and register at uwager.lv today, and any special advantage offers that you're offering them as we're doing the show?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. You mentioned free same-day payouts. We always have free same-day payouts, which is huge. That's the most important thing, getting paid. On top of that, we have the best lines in the industry. Going into baseball season, we're the only book with a true dime line all the way up to 190. So that's huge for MLB.
That's strong, yes.
Best lines by far. You can play with anonymity. You don't have to pay taxes, play from any state in the U.S. And as far as promos right now, we can use your promo code playbook to get 70% free play with not a huge commitment. It comes with a one-time rollover and no hold just to try us out. You can get 70% on your first deposit, try us out, try out the lines, make a few bets or make one bet and take your payout and see how fast our payouts are. And we're pretty sure you're going to be coming back.
Well, I highly encourage our listeners and our viewers out there to take advantage of that 70% offer. Just log on at uwager.lv or give them a call toll free at 1-800-UWAGER. Use the promo code playbook and take advantage of that big 70% bonus offer being offered by Jordan Reed and the group at uwager.lv. Jordan, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to be rooting for you like the Miami Dolphins. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. My true blood is with the Cleveland Browns, but I've been enhanced down here in South Florida here now for over 20 years. So I'm getting some Dolphin blood in me, and I understand why. They just have to, I think, do a little better job on the coaching sideline staff of things this year, but that's my own personal opinion.
That too, for sure. Well, thanks for having me on again. Big fan of the show. Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan. That was Jordan Reed joining us from uwager.lv, where you can pick up that big 70% bonus. That's a really great bonus, guys. Log on or call them, 1-800-UWAGER, or log on at uwager.lv, mention playbook, and get that big 70% bonus. And with that, guys, let's roll it over now to the National Football League draft, a little bit of an overview from the draft. And I'm going to ask Greg to chime in on with us, with Andy and Tony and myself, for the overview, because as I mentioned before, Greg is a big contributor to that Our Lads draft preview guide, which is outstanding. And Greg did a lot of great work for that preview guide, so I know he'll have some things to pass up here along the way as we're coming up here. I have to mention this, though. I have to give our kudos to the staff at PlaybookSports.com because we did really, really well again in our playbook mock draft this football season. And in fact, the last 2 years of the 64 players drafted in the first round, we've nailed 49 of those players and 190 out of 254 players the last 8 years, I should say. It was a kind of a unique draft to say the least. And what we saw coming out of the draft here, the SEC obviously leading the way again this year. 59 players came out of the ACC this football draft, followed by the Pac-12. And kudos to the Pac-12. In their final year of existence, only the SEC had more players drafted from that conference. It was really talent-laden this year, was the Pac-12, and it was nice to see just that. 12 players. You had the Big Ten. 43 players to the Pac-12. You had the Big Ten here with 42, the ACC with 41, and the Big 12 with 31 among the other Power 5 or soon-to-be Power 4 conferences from what we saw in the draft this year. I'm going to roll this over to you, Andy, here, and ask you your questions, your first thoughts on what happened in the National Football League draft this year.
Well, Mark, for the most part, it went according to form, certainly amongst the top few picks. I think the surprise may have been, although it was not that much of a surprise, let's say for 48 hours leading into the draft, and that is the six quarterbacks taken in the first round. Perhaps the fact that the six were taken as early as they were might have been a surprise, but a lot of people who were astute enough to get on the number over 4.5 when that prop came out about three or four weeks ago really were prescient in forecasting what might be a prop that would move. Now, for a long time, I've been talking about I did not like what the Bears did as far as trading away Justin Fields. They had invested 3 years in him. He had shown decent progress in each of the 3 years, especially cutting down interceptions and increasing his completion percentage. As well, they had invested in him, as I mentioned. So now they're starting over by going to Caleb Williams, and we don't know what he's going to turn into. A lot of people were very high on him. It seemed to be the obvious number one choice. I was a little concerned because he was not nearly as effective in 2023 as he was when he won the Heisman in 2022. And at the same time, it's always going to be difficult for a rookie quarterback. At the same time, and part of the reason why I thought they should have held on to Fields is with the number one and number nine choices, they had great maneuverability. It turns out, Williams is designed to succeed, considering the additions of Keenan Allen in the offseason and DJ Moore already on the roster. They've got some nice young running backs who have been productive. Justin Fields, of course, gave him the additional ability to run the ball, which is another option that you don't find in a majority of the quarterbacks this year. At the same time, had they kept Fields and maybe even worked a trade down a few spots, they could have had Marvin Harrison, yet another outstanding running receiver, one who many experts believe was actually the best overall talent in the draft, regardless of position. And then they might have even been able to add tight end Brock Bowers from Georgia, who is a very highly thought of and highly sought after. They could have been, they still might be very effective on offense, but they could have had one of the better offensive skill position units in the NFL, which might have even lessened some of the pressure on the offensive line because of the running, the balanced running ability. So I still think they did well with the picks that they made with the other wide receiver that they got with their number nine pick. So overall, I would say you'd have to grade the Bears as doing something positive. I did like the choice of Bo Nix by Denver at quarterback. Many people expected them to take a quarterback. They weren't quite sure who it was going to be, but you know, if there's one coach in the NFL who has shown a great ability to work with quarterbacks and get the most and even more out of them than their let's call it textbook potential, it's Sean Payton. We saw what he did with Drew Brees, got him into the Hall of Fame, although he was on a pretty good career before he went to New Orleans, but he cemented it with what he ended up putting up in his career. I thought both Buffalo and Kansas City addressed some significant needs, and you alluded to Kansas City earlier with the addition of their wide receiver, which was a huge lacking point in their offense this past year. They still had a very good offense, but below the production of previous years. At the same time, their defense was one of the best in the NFL this year under Steve Spagnuolo. So they addressed a major need. Buffalo, with the departure of Diggs, I think also addressed a significant need. So I think that the strong actually got a bit stronger this year, and that I thought was very much of a positive. I didn't really have too many. I can't really be too critical of a lot of teams because we don't know what their thinking was. I mean, Atlanta has come in for a lot of criticism with the choice of Michael Penix Jr., especially after signing Cousins to the huge quarter. I think it was a 4-year contract with $100 million guaranteed. The thought is that they're going to let Penix sit. I think that the comment that came out, we're going to use the Green Bay model. When they drafted Jordan Love, they knew it was going to be ultimately to succeed Aaron Rodgers. Let him sit and learn for a few years. And I don't think that's a terrible idea with Penix Jr. because of his injury issues in the past. Seeing limited playing time, barring a significant injury to Cousins, allows whatever injuries that he's had in the past to continue to heal even more with little subject to injury unless he's pressed into service. So while I think a lot of people disagreed with it, and I might not have made that choice, I can understand their thinking. Now all they have to do is be as fortunate as Green Bay was, at least in Jordan Love's first year as a starter.
Well, Andy, let me ask you here before I turn this over to Tony. What was your take on the biggest surprise of the first round? What surprised you the most other than the Michael Penix move?
I guess maybe just the limited number of trades, especially amongst the top teams in the draft with all those quarterbacks available and several teams in need of a quarterback. I was surprised that a team, well, let's put it this way. I'd say the Giants, that they didn't take a quarterback at all, Daniel Jones, who was not living up to pre-draft expectations, although I remember I was very fond of the pick coming out of Duke. He had a nice career with a good quarterback as a coach, as his head coach at Duke. But the fact that he was injury-prone and they really don't have quality backups, I was really surprised that the Giants did not do more to address what has been an injury, especially with the departure of Saquon Barkley. Now, they got a decent running back, but not one that comparable to Barkley, certainly if they stay injured, because Barkley did have some injury issues. So I think I was a bit surprised at what the Giants did. Although I like the talent that they drafted, I'm not sure that they addressed their most significant, the most franchise's most significant concern when they're looking to become a contender.
Remember,
the Giants were in the playoffs just 2 years ago before everything fell apart. So it's not as though they were significantly far behind making it back to the playoffs.
True. Good point. Good point. Well, Tony, I'm going to say this before I hand it over to you. My biggest surprise personally in the draft, other than the Michael Penix situation, was the fact that the Buffalo Bills got a Hall of Fame receiver in Xavier Worthy. And when you say Hall of Fame receiver, are you kidding me? The fact of the matter is Xavier Worthy is in the National Football League Hall of Fame. What they did was they put all of his artifacts, his shoes and everything, from that 4.2140 that he ran, the fastest in history, and it's now in the Hall of Fame. So there is Xavier Worthy in the Hall of Fame. But that aside, just the fact that Buffalo made traded away and allowed, if you will, the Chiefs to get Xavier Worthy. I can't understand for the life of me what they would have let Kansas City make a move like that for. Not so much that maybe they didn't like Worthy, Buffalo didn't, but why let Kansas City get him, your number one ace nemesis? That was the most surprising move in the draft. Tony?
Well, I think that was addressed. I think that was addressed, and it was basically if they don't trade with us to get him, they would have done it with somebody else. Which, that's NFL politicking, so I'm not sure if that's accurate or not. But I mean, I would imagine that's who the Chiefs were targeting, and Buffalo liked the deal. I definitely see what you're saying, because that was a heavy subject of debate. Why would the Bills allow the Chiefs to help themselves? But if that's the answer, if you figured, if they don't make that deal with us, they're going to strike it with somebody else, and that softens the blow a little bit. But I mean, look, the draft I thought was very entertaining, if nothing else, and my biggest surprise was the lack of defensive players in that first 14, I guess it was,
yes.
Maybe even more. I forget the exact number, but just going pick after pick after pick, even after Atlanta made the biggest surprise, where they were supposed to take a defensive player there early and went Penix, which I didn't hate either, and then you still had the run of offensive tackles and other offensive players, the quarterbacks with Nix, before a defensive player went in Latu to the Colts.
Well, the Penix situation, I don't want to beat this like a drum, because it's been talked over and rehashed probably more than any other move out of the draft. But as our lads called out, that Michael Penix Jr. has had 4 season-ending injuries in his career. I think he's maybe had 5 seasons he's played in college football. 4 of them were season-ending injuries. Do you think that should have factored into the decision about backing Kirk Cousins up with a mature quarterback like Michael Penix that has injuries or is injury prone?
I guess he'll be 24 this week.
Yes.
At some point this week, either Friday or Saturday. So he's going to be an older rookie. I just think watching Desmond Ridder all last season, and I remember a top play that I had with the Falcons where I loved the spot. I'm like, if Ridder doesn't mess this up, this is one of my top plays of the season. And sure enough, he was terrible. And I understand the thinking that Arthur Blank does not want a situation where they have no quarterback. So what happens if Kirk Cousins is slow to mend off of this injury, because he's coming back off a severe injury as an older player? I've heard the argument that you're setting up a locker room controversy where Cousins doesn't have any equity built up in the city of Atlanta or in this locker room as a leader. Well, so what? I mean, like the way that the NFL works, it's week to week as is. Cousins, if he's healthy, is going to do what Kirk Cousins is going to do. He's going to throw some interceptions in key moments. He's going to go out there and lead you on a two-minute drill to win a game once or twice this season. He's a competent quarterback. He's proven that. He's a leader. He's an accurate passer. But if he is hurt, do you want to go to somebody else on that roster, or do you want to give a very talented Michael Penix Jr. an opportunity if he's able to learn from Cousins and go through all of these progressions, you know, coming into that building over the summer and then into the fall and taking the normal amount of reps as a rookie and then potentially being ready if there's an injury to Cousins midseason, so you're not messing around with somebody that's very less talented than he is and in a position where he can be a life preserver for you. So again, if they liked him as much as they said he did, that they did, they were people in that building that have worked with Matthew Stafford said, hey, this guy's Matthew Stafford part two in terms of how he throws the ball, then I can get behind that choice. I don't hate it as much as a lot of people did, although obviously they had holes to fill. I expected them to go defense, I think, like everybody else did. But again, not going to say they're all morons down there. So, from that standpoint, definitely Michael Penix is one of my top three favorite quarterbacks in this draft. So maybe that has something to do with it, too.
Mark, I was going to say, I can understand the pick, but you also have to consider, does Atlanta really think that they are a Super Bowl or even a playoff contender this year? Because if they think that, then why wouldn't they then why wouldn't they have used the pick to help them now, as opposed to A, would Penix be available in the second round where a lot of people expected him to be? B, if indeed they don't believe that they're a contender this year or that they can be a contender this year, then, well, you've got you rely on Cousins for a year or two, and as you build around him, and they could have done that with some of the players in the first round, and then there's always an opportunity to draft Cousins' successor, the longer-term answer, either in next year's draft or with a free agent signing during next year's offseason, as opposed to spending the your number one pick on a need that's not on a position, let's say, or on a player who's not expected to help you or be needed to help you except in an emergency situation this year.
Well, Tony, let me ask you this then, before I turn it over to Greg and get his take on the draft. Which team do you feel crushed the draft? Which team did the best job in the National Football League draft this year?
I mean, it was great for Arizona that they get the guy they want at four without any sweat. So I really like Marvin Harrison Jr. The first shows where I joined you guys, I was of the opinion that the Bears were going to give up on Justin Fields. I really didn't have that concrete a take as to whether that was the right decision or not. It just was writing on the wall. They're going to take Caleb Williams, and that's what they ended up doing. So the fact that they do take Caleb Williams and end up with Roma Dunze to be the number three receiver there this season, really worked out wonderfully for them, because you've got a number one, and then you bring in a Keenan Allen. So now you've got a really low pressure situation for Dunze. You've got Cole Kmet as a tight end. So you've got an arsenal of weapons now. The expectations are going to be there for Caleb Williams right out of the gate. And I think we'll see if he's ready for them. But certainly, I don't think that the draft could have gone better from a on-paper standpoint for Chicago. Now we'll see if it translates to the field.
I'm going to turn this over to Greg DePalma, our producer here. Greg, and again, kudos to the group at RLADS and all that you contributed to that terrific NFL draft guide. And before I ask you your opinion on what you saw of the draft, I got to ask you one more probing question, if I may. And I don't, like I say, it's this Michael Penix situation. If he ends up being everything and more that Fontenot thought he was going to be, kudos to him, and he made a super, super move. If he ends up not being that, I also have to question maybe the second pick for Atlanta in the draft is a defensive lineman, Ruke Ohara, I believe it's pronounced. I looked in the RLADS draft guide, and he wasn't very, very highly touted. In fact, I think he was maybe expected to be a third-round pick. So now you're left with the Atlanta Falcons with everything hanging on Michael Penix's shoulders here. And if he doesn't come through and the second-round pick doesn't come through, it could end up being a disaster for Atlanta. What's your overall take on that, Greg?
Yeah, trying to pronounce this guy's name. Yeah, Arororo, from Clemson. I mean, look, a good, solid player, defensive tackle, but defensive tackles normally at that position. I know Arledge probably had him drafted between the second and fourth round, and we had talked about him on some previous shows. Solid player, difference maker? No, not the type of difference maker that a lot of people thought Dallas Turner was going to be, which is why everybody had Turner going to Atlanta. I thought they were smart to not take Dallas Turner where they did, because I never looked at Dallas Turner as a dominating top 10 pick. I think Dallas Turner is going to have a fine career in the NFL. He could do a lot of things, but he's not a difference maker. So I understand why they didn't go that route. Look, I don't know how much longer McKay is going to have. He's not the one making the final decisions, I guess, but he's been around the league for a long time. The GM there, he held on to his job, even though they got rid of the head coach. I know there are a lot of fans that wonder whether or not he'll be gone after this season if things don't turn out well. But, yeah, this was strange just because of the fact that, and Andy brought up the thing about, well, the Green Bay model. I think the biggest difference there was that, like, for instance, the last time Green Bay made one of these moves was Jordan Love, but Jordan Love was drafted in the later end of the first round. He wasn't a top 10 draft pick. They didn't go with Aaron Rodgers.
It was 18, I think, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was like so it was the back end of the first round instead of in the top 10. That never would have worked out if you would have drafted Jordan Love with Aaron Rodgers on the in uniform for at least two more years. So that's a big difference. I'm surprised, though, because the one thing I'm surprised about, though, is I think there were a lot of people who just believe, and I'm sure this is right, that they made this move and didn't consult the owner. I mean, look, you don't want your owner getting involved in things like this, but if I'm the owner, I probably would have liked to have been in on this one because of the fact it's a quarterback, you got to pay the guy. He's not going to play for a couple of years. So that means you're going to have maybe 2 years before you have to make a decision on a fifth-year option, that kind of deal. It's hard enough to make a decision on these guys with 3 or 4 years of taking a look at them, let alone just 2 years. But, yeah, it was everybody's wow moment. We'll only find out whether or not it works out, though, in the long run. And that's why the draft is one of those deals that you can come back a year or two later and go, yeah, that really was a pretty smart pick after all.
So the general manager and director of player personnel are still there for the Falcons.
To reap those benefits, yes.
Yeah, so they better be right.
I saw one of the best tweets I saw was Fontenot talking with Arthur Blank and Arthur Blank conversing with him, and they said more or less in captions that he was explaining to Fontenot that next year his vision, he'll be a ticket taker at the Falcons football games for the move that he made. I can't believe he wouldn't have discussed that with them in advance. But
By the way, Kevin Knight does a really good job covering Falcons for the Falcoholic. I'm sure I'll talk to him in the next few weeks and get his opinion firsthand. But I was watching their draft show, their live draft show, and they were not happy.
I would not think
not
so.
Happy. So.
Well, and you take a look at that division. Any of the four teams are capable of winning it this year based upon the overall rosters. So, Atlanta, maybe they're thinking is that, hey, it's a wide-open division. We have Penix Jr. We don't really need him right now, but given Cousins' history of injuries, we think that by the time, if there's such a time that he needs to come in, maybe they can do it because it is a wide-open division considering what the talent is on the other teams and Tampa Bay seemingly a little bit down from the last few years.
I know that the visual on the Arthur Blank thing at the draft when Penix was drafted wasn't great, but I do not believe that he wasn't notified beforehand. And Dimitroff, I think, went on one of these shows and said there's no way he didn't know. So I don't buy that part of it. He had to have known that was going to be the pick. Whether he was 100% on board on it, we'll see if we hear about that. But there's no way that he flat out said no when they went in that direction anyway, or didn't know whatsoever.
Or didn't know.
Right. I don't buy that.
Or didn't know. That's your point. So, Greg, who do you think did a smash job in the draft of all the teams? Who do you give kudos to, your highest mark?
And I'm a big fan of Les Snead with the Rams. And I think that he did a really good job again when you take a look at the fact that Jared Verse, a lot of people thought he was going to go in the top 10. and he ends up going later in the first round. My favorite player in the entire draft, I said this in December, and now people started catching on because he had a phenomenal combine, was Braden Fisk, the guy, the defensive tackle they picked up in the second round. Love the kid. He's not Aaron Donald, but he is just going to be a really big disruptor for him. They have a diminutive running back already in the backfield, and then they go out and they get another diminutive guy. So I thought that made sense. You get Blake Corum in the third round, I believe it was. They pick up Kitchens, who our lads rated as the second best safety in the draft. I believe they got him in the third or the fourth round. And they also got a really good defensive tackle who had a lot of production alongside of a row, Tyler Davis, in the sixth round. So if I had to put like high marks on somebody, I just think he is one of the most underrated. Matter of fact, I did a show, when was it? I think about a couple of weeks ago, and my thumbnail was, you know, basically, is he the most underrated general manager in the game? And I believe he is, because he's never won Executive of the Year. Brandon Bean has two Executive of the Year award winner. He's a two-time Executive of the Year award winner. And Les Snead's never won one. And I think he's done a fantastic job, and I think he had a fantastic draft.
Well, I think they've done real well for themselves, especially just considering when they won the Super Bowl and they had to let the whole ship fall apart. Yep. You know, they couldn't afford to sign anybody. They had let lose players and lose draft picks on top of it. It looked like a real dismal situation for the Rams, and you blink and all of a sudden they're back in it. A nice season last year and a rock solid draft, as you mentioned, this year. So.
And last year they picked up some really good players in the draft.
Yeah. Yep, back-to-back years, and it's going to make them formidable. I think this football
By the way, Mark, I'd like to hear what everyone thinks about. I happen to like what they did, the Chargers and Jim Harbaugh.
You know, when we were doing our mock drafts, and I was conducting one of the shows, and I did not have the Chargers pick on another show, and then my retort was, because they were going after wide receiver, and my retort was, look, I know Jim Harbaugh. He doesn't care about wide receivers early in the draft. I mean, as long as he's been at Michigan, he could care less about wide receivers. Sure, does he want to have skill positions like anybody else? Yes, but if he was going to pick it, he'd pick tight end over wide receiver, and he was not going to draft Bowers at number five. So of course he was going to go offensive line. And then because it was such a deep receiver class, you take the receiver second, which is what he did, but to go with McConkey in the second round. He also, because they have the former Michigan defensive coordinator, he picks up Junior Colson, the linebacker from Michigan. So that's perfect because he's the intermediary from the coach. So he's going to be able to understand the defense and be a lot easier to be the field general in year one. He picked up a really good defensive back in Cam Hart. He picked up another receiver, Jerry Rice's kid, late in the draft. And they also picked up a running back from Troy, Kamal Vidal, who I think could be a really good sleeper pick in this draft. Not saying he's a superstar. He's too small. Yeah, but he's a productive, tough kid. And then to boot, he did pick another Michigan guy, Cornelius Johnson, who I'm sure is going to help on special teams. And then also maybe help with the offensive translation. So, yeah, I thought they did a really good job, and Ault is going to have a great career.
I think they don't have enough yet to catch Kansas City, but I think they've closed the gap significantly.
I agree, Andy. I think I got to give an A for the draft.
To me, Kamani Vidal
was
To me, Kamani Vidal was the most productive. To me, Kamani Vidal was the most productive running back in all of college football last year. And I know Corum had more touchdowns, and there was other guys. But I also saw that in pass pro, Vidal like stood out in terms of metrics over everybody else. Even if he is smaller, like his technique was brilliant. So I think that to get him, I think it was a sixth rounder, right, Greg?
Yeah, it was late. Yep.
Fifth or sixth. He was one of the steals of the draft. I thought the Eagles did well with Nye Smith. So, yeah, I mean, like there were some guys where I tuned out to tune into the NBA playoffs and then went back and looked at some of the names. It stunned me that Vidal lasted so long. Maybe he was a size concern. But from an on-field skill standpoint, and you know some guys just outplay their frames in the NFL, and the Chargers have ironically had a few of those that come to mind. I think he's going to be a load in this league and stick around for a long time. Really
does
excited.
Does anybody know how many Michigan players or how many players from Michigan that Harbaugh actually drafted?
I believe it was two, but or three. Was it three? I know two of them. But also, I think the other question, though, Mark, is how many guys did he sign after the draft? Because, come on.
From the secret draft, right.
Yeah, I mean, in that, because you know all of those kids are going to give him first shot. So I haven't looked at it yet, but I would be very intrigued to find out if he signed any and overall who those players were. I got to believe at least a few of them.
There's a story that we picked up and we reported on.
I got it if you want to know just real quick.
Yes.
Drafted Colson and Johnson, like you mentioned, and the only undrafted free agent from Michigan is their guard, Carson Barnhart. But everybody else is from other schools. So.
But he technically wouldn't count as a draft pick, but at least he was selected. And I was alluding to is I came across an article about how important what they call these secret draft players are, and how well they've worked out. In fact, they worked out even better than 6th and 7th seeds combined, these players that they pick up in this non-drafted status. So that's very, very important. But my whole point here is that the team that led all teams in the National Football League draft this year was not Alabama. It was not Georgia. It was Michigan, with 13 players off that roster here. That's probably serves the point, the fact that they are the defending national champion, and they were a deeply, deeply talented football team.
Yeah, I remember just a few years ago in one of these drafts, and it was like they had like one player drafted. And it was just embarrassing to be a Michigan fan at that point. And like you said, that's how you know that a coach has changed the culture there when you had 13 players. And by the way, the fact that 13 players were drafted probably had a lot to do with the fact that he wasn't able to sign any of the guys because they were all drafted.
On the opposite end of that ladder, guys, you see all these power five conference teams dominate, you know, the players that are being drafted within the draft. And, you know, Texas had 11, Alabama had 10, Washington had 10. But Ohio State only had 4 players drafted this year, and I think that speaks for maybe what might be going on at Ohio State. And you know, I don't know if it's a Ryan Day type thing, but the move to hire Chip Kelly, I think, might have been a move out of desperation that he knows he's got to do something there. And it was affirmed by the fact that only 4 Buckeyes were taken in the draft, and they draft as well, or they recruit, I should say, as well as any team does in the country. So if you go from real high recruiting rankings to only having 4 players selected, that means something happened between the time they entered Columbus and the time they left Columbus. So, you know, there could be something in the making there at Ohio State.
I wonder how much the transfer portal may have to do with that.
I'm sure it has a lot to do with it.
As far as players leaving before they complete, you know, their college eligibility at Ohio State, we'll probably be seeing that with a lot of the major power teams throughout college football, especially with the even more liberalized transfer rules that I think they agreed to a few months ago.
Yeah, well, I made a point on, because again, I do those Rutgers shows on the Rutgers channel, the postgame shows, and I was talking to them about, I forget what it was, it had something to do with, it must have been right after the draft last year, and I brought up the fact that there were some really top-rated recruits that went to Maryland. You know, and they're battling for Rutgers for these recruits. And I remember saying on the show, if this isn't a perfect opportunity for, say, Coach Yano at Rutgers to when he's sitting in with new recruits to go, you see what happens when you go to Maryland? You don't get drafted. You're not a better player than when you got there. You come here, take a look at my record. Take a look at the guys that weren't even drafted. Take a look at the defensive back that was drafted last year for Tampa Bay, and he's a starter now this year, Christian Izian. I develop my guys. They don't.
Well, as was touched on about the, Andy mentioned about the transfer portal affecting the status of the teams and the players that were drafted. I want to remind our listeners and viewers out there, you want to be sure to pick up a copy of the 2024 Playbook Football Preview Guide magazine. If for no other reason, Tony Mejia is going to hit on the transfer portal and explain a lot of the nuances and what went on and what to watch for this season. So look for Tony's article inside the guide this year. That'll be a real, real good read, I promise you. Guys, before we turn it over
by
to...
By the way, excuse me, Mark. Go ahead, when will that be available? Probably around, what, July 4th or thereabouts?
Well, it's going to be on sale at newsstands July 16th. July 16th. We're going a week later here on advice of our distributor, and primarily advice being that sometimes you can go out too early, and what happens is the Barnes & Noble stores and that, they pull books by date, and they could pull it before people even realize it was even there. So we're listening and we're doing what they say. But July 16th, on sale, newsstands across the country, Barnes & Noble, and our friends at Vegas at the Gamblers Book Club will have them as
well. And that means that you'll probably have the latest information of these preseason publications, which come out. I've seen them come out as early as Memorial Day weekend, some of the major ones. So there's a lot that goes on between Memorial Day and, well, let's say July 4th, the publication day. So it's an app. I mean, look, Mark, I've been using it, I think, ever since the first one came out. What was it, like in 1991 or something like that?
Yeah, this will be the 32nd year, right? Exactly.
Yeah, so it's been just a tremendous resource to use. I'm one of the old-fashioned type people. I still like to hold things in my hand and go back and flip through the pages rather than have to scroll up and down and miss it by 15 pages or something. In fact, I get at least two of them every year, sometimes three, because I mark up with the notes and everything, underline things with the highlighters, because it really has just about everything you could ask for as far as when it comes to wagering on college and pro football, because it is a combined publication. So I highly recommend it, and I can't wait. It's almost like a holiday for me when it comes out.
Well, thanks to the unsolicited confirmation on that, Andy, if you will. I really appreciate that. And I'm kind of pulling my hair out right now, because one of the other reasons we're going out later with it is to go out as late as you possibly can, because information on college football players coming back from the portal, which Tony's going to be working on, to returning starters, to returning production, you mix and you blend all that stuff together here. The fact of the matter is these colleges are no longer providing a lot of that information readily. A lot of colleges don't even have SIDs to report on what's going on with these programs here. So it's sort of a little bit of a fight putting all this together here. So, but when it does come out, it's going to, I guarantee it, will be worth the read doing just that. Guys, before we go over to the NFL side of things and the college football, one quick question I want to ask everybody here about from this draft, and I'll give you the I'll pass these figures along, that when you're looking at rookie of the year and you're talking about props, you're looking ahead to possible props and you're looking at rookie of the year from players that are coming out of this draft. Since 2010, every offensive rookie of the year, there have been seven quarterbacks, four running backs, and three wide receivers. On the defensive side, there have been eight defensive linemen, three linebackers, and three defensive backs. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to start with you, Greg. Out of this group here, this core, who do you make or see as being your NFL Rookie of the Year coming out of this draft?
Oh, I'm going to give it to the guy that I think is and should have been picked first overall, and it's Jaden Daniels. I think that he's going to have and he's going to be the one that is going to be able to come right out of the gates and be successful, sort of like CJ Stroud. Caleb, I think, is going to do pretty well, too. But there's going to be so much pressure on him. I think that's going to hurt him a little bit. And also, Washington has built some good structure with their coaching staff. They got some good veteran guys there. And I think that'll be a calming influence for Daniels. So, yeah, so I would say Daniels. I'm sure he's going to be one of the short prices if you're looking for NFL Rookies of the Year. So you can't make much money if you pick him. So I'll have to take a look and see if I can find any good sleepers.
Well, he would be my choice anyway. I was kind of interested and stunned to learn that he has the college football all-time highest efficiency passer rating in college football. And that was either from last year or the year before, but I'm with you. I'm a Jaden Daniels guy. Tony, who do you see Rookie of the Year coming out of this draft?
Well, Sporting News had me write a column on the odds right the day after the draft. So that's up if you go to my author page over there, and it's available on my Twitter in the bio. So all you have to do is click on that, Mejia Dinero. But I just broke down the odds and you know how these players fit. Caleb Williams is plus 200 after the draft, so you basically get 2-1, or getting 1-2, doubling your investment. Jaden Daniels, who I could absolutely get behind, but I prefer Williams over Daniels in the situation that they're walking into, even though Daniels does get Cliff Kingsbury to collaborate with. Daniels is plus 650. JJ McCarthy, who also has a ton of weapons, obviously, in Jefferson and Addison and TJ Hockenson and all of that, plus 800. And then receiver-wise, you got Marvin Harrison Jr. He should be their number one immediately. He's plus 600. Malik Nabers, number one at New York, plus 900. And then you go on down the line. Obviously, the biggest sleeper to me is going to be Xavier Worthy, plus 1,600. I think that Rashee Rice is going to be fine in terms of his legal handlings to be the Chiefs' number one wide receiver this season. But will there be a sophomore slump? Will anything happen in terms of what we saw in the Super Bowl, where Rice was clearly frustrated with Mahomes? Obviously, Kelsey's still going to be the top dog as far as going over the middle and being the number one target. But does Xavier Worthy take some of Rashee Rice's touches away and emerge as a guy that is the Tyreek Hill in that offense because he has the speed to do it? Plus 1600, I can't go wrong with that. Nix is plus 1600. Adunze is plus 1800. Brock Bowers is plus 2500. So those are the top offensive number guys. Obviously, no running backs were taken in that first round. But to me, I thought that Arizona, the Miami Dolphins got the top running back available in Jalen Wright. But he just goes into a very crowded situation with A-Chain and the other running back that they have over there, Mostert.
Well, I thought I the Worthy pick, I got to ask you this, Andy. He looks like he fits like a glove in Kansas City here. You know, they're going to start talking a little bit of Tyreek Hill about him with speed and Mahomes being his quarterback, so forth, and being a target. Are you buying all that at Kansas City? And if you are, is he your choice for Rookie of the Year? Or if he isn't, who is?
Tony, what did you say the odds were on Worthy?
I've got him posted. You can see him there, Andy.
Okay. I was going to say he might be the value pick because the other three that I were considering were Caleb Williams, Jalen Daniels, and Marvin Harrison. I'll dispense with Marvin Harrison simply because there's not much around him. He figures to be the featured guy, and so he may not get the numbers that the other that the two quarterbacks might get, even looking at some of the receivers. Worthy might be even similar, if not better, than Harrison, simply because he's going to get a lot of opportunities with some of the other players being double teamed on Kansas City. Caleb, as much as I talked about earlier and for the last several months about what Chicago did, I think Caleb Williams has a lot of talent around him to be able to put up some very good numbers, especially, you know, with Keenan Allen coming over, DJ Moore, and some young running backs who were effective last year. Daniels, the concern I have with Daniels again is the team that he's playing on may not have enough of the supporting cast right now for him to put up those kind of numbers. But if you ask me, who may end up having the more productive career? And again, we don't know about injuries, and that's a concern with Daniels. He might end up having a more productive career overall than Williams if we look back at this, say, 3-4 years down the road.
Alrighty, good overview, good run there from the college football draft for the National Football League draft of the college football players. And I want to remind our listeners out there that if you like what we're doing, click on the like button down below, please. And also, if you haven't subscribed, we really encourage you to subscribe to the site. We're going to be back, like I say, in July, getting ready for the football season. But sure nice to have you aboard. And we'll be putting out some spot videos and some spot podcasts between now and then. And you'll be informed of them when we do. So subscribe, and you'll also be attuned to just that fact. Hit that subscribe button, if you will. Guys, let's go over to a little bit of a sneak preview. I know we can't get too in-depth right now, but we can look at least, and I know there will be some talk about that, looking at the 2024 college and NFL football seasons here. And let's keep it on the college football side of things and look at college football for the 2024 football season. And I'll just lay the table, if I will, for the lay it out in the for the artwork here, the groundwork here, that college football – to me, was obviously the demise of the Pac-12 last year, or what we're going to see this year for the demise of the Pac-12 last year. It was absolutely heartbreaking to see what happened the way it rolled out. Now we're going to find teams that are going to have to pay the price for doing just that. And some of those teams, mainly two of those teams, are going to be teams out of the Pac-12 that are going to be playing in the ACC conference this year. And what a joke that is. I mean, California and Stanford in the ACC. Well, what we did is we broke down the air travel miles that they're going to have to endure in doing stuff like that. And it's not pretty, guys. California's air miles to the 7 ACC teams that were in the ACC last year and going to those away games, they're going to be traveling anywhere from 2,400 to 3,100 miles per trip. That means 19,270 miles round trip for them. Stanford, the same way. They've got 2,300 to 3,000 miles from low to high, and they're going to be totaling 19,022 miles I think it's just it's outrageous what they're doing to these teams and making them play like that. We're going to have similar situations in the Pac-10 as well. You got the Washington's going to the Pac-10, to the Big Ten like that, going to Rutgers and situations like that. That's one thing at the top of the surface that's going to come into play this year. The other thing I would consider looking at during the offseason, and you'll be able to ferret this out in the Playbook Football Preview Guide magazine, is how important returning experience is in college football. When I talk about returning experience, I'm talking about either returning starters or I'm talking about production that's returning. Teams that actually contributed to the team last year aren't going to be there again to contribute once again this year. If you take a look at the rankings here, this is pretty interesting. The number one team in returning experience in college football this year is going to be Virginia Tech, bringing 22 starters back, 11 on offense, with obviously their starting quarterback here. And they rank number one in the Bill Conley overall returning production rankings. This is a football team here that that's the same honor that went to Kansas last year. I'm calling it out because Kansas was the number one returning team last year, and you saw what they did last year. They improved three full games last year with the benefit of all that experience. And watch out for Virginia Tech. They're going to likely be in that similar boat this year. Also, number two on that list as far as returning production goes is Iowa State out of the Big 12. They improved from 4 wins to 7 last year. The biggest concern for me, though, when I look inside the numbers, is the fact that while they went from 4 wins to 7, their offense and defense regressed last year. I don't know how that happened, but it did. But nonetheless, they're going to be number two in overall experience. The worst team in college football coming back from an overall experience standpoint is the Air Force. And the fact is the military academies never bring much back in returning production as it is anyway. And it's a team here that's won 29 games the last 3 years. They could be going backward this football season. And the second worst team, Ohio University, out of the MAC conference here. It's going to get mighty, mighty lean for this team. They won 10 games in back-to-back years, and they won't smell half of that this particular football season. With that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Greg, and your little quick take and observation on what you're foreseeing for the college football season coming up this year.
Let me just say this. I mean, you know how hard it is. We all know how hard it is. Maybe they don't what it takes for you to put these preview magazines together, especially for college football, because sure. You have to dive into this is a few years ago, even spring and where these guys fit and all that with the transfer portal. I don't know how you do it. I just don't. Because really all you're getting and all you have is just, the players that are there, but that's pretty much it. I mean, I watched the Rutgers spring game the other day. They had no starters playing, none. And I can imagine a lot of these schools probably doing the same thing. So it's so hard to figure out other than just knowing, all right, I know this guy's going to be there. I know Dylan Gabriel's going to be the quarterback of Oregon and so forth. It's just so hard to figure out. That's why I think your point is extremely important as far as returning production, because that's a very important stat that at least it's something you actually physically know. So, yeah, I think it's going to be really tough to figure out. I would probably have to take a look knowing Texas. I'm not a Sarkisian fan. I know you aren't either. But to know he gets his quarterback back, they've got playoff experience. I think that's important. Oregon's going to be competitive. They're going to have Dylan Gabriel. And anybody can take Georgia, Ohio State. But those next two teams on the list, I think those would be the teams that I would look at, especially Texas. They're going to be pretty tough with Ewers coming back with the playoff experience.
Andy, I'm going to ask you the same question. I know we're a little early on in the game right now. We don't have a lot to work with, a lot to absorb as far as information goes. But what is your feeling as you're looking forward to the 2024 college football season with all of the conference realignments, all of the transfer portals, even more than they've ever been before? And like I said, Tony's going to be reporting on that in the Playbook Football Preview Guide magazine. What's your take, Andy, on the college football 2024 season? What are we looking at?
Well, once again, and you guys have sort of alluded to it, the transfer portal has meant that there's more turnover from season to season than we've ever seen before. There have always been transfers, but then you had to sit out a year, and so that was not a major overhaul. You had players who had gone out of their eligibility, graduated, or had gone into the NFL draft, or those who had declared a little early to be able to go into the draft. So that has been probably, I'm going to say, threefold, if not more, the number of departures or changes in roster composition. So it's very difficult until you get really close to the start of the season. You see how teams are doing or coming out of their summer camps, which is why it's very difficult for me, at least, to make a wager on a futures team at this time of the year. I think the people who have the edge in making future bets right now are those handicappers and bettors who concentrate on just a handful of teams or a handful of conferences. And so they know all the teams, let's say, in the Big 12. They know nothing about, let's see, the ACC, because they don't focus on that, at least until the season gets underway. Those are the people, I think, who have the advantages, because, remember, you're tying up your money on futures for basically 8 or 9 months at a minimum, and there could be so much that'll occur between the time you make the wager and the time that the season even begins in late August or early September. So if I'm going to look at teams that I would expect to be in contention, and they're probably at short odds, Georgia comes into mind first, because they have, in the last 4 or 5 years, become at a level of what Alabama and Clemson were throughout the 2010s and into the early 2020s. Of course, we don't know what's going to happen with Alabama with the coaching change, retirement of Nick Saban. Another team that I like, because they've always been consistent, even though the coaches come under criticism, Penn State has always been a consistent player in the upper echelon of the Big Ten. Really, after the Joe Paterno left, I think, about a decade or so ago, and we've had a couple of coaches take over. I think Bill O'Brien was there for a bit. And now, of course, you've got the current coach there who's been around for years and continually gets criticized. But he continues to have, you know, 9, 10, 11 win seasons and is always a factor. And, you know, you have to wonder if Michigan is ripe for a decline this year without Harbaugh and all the people who left the program as a result of being the national championship and the number of players who left. As I say, Ohio State, you did express some concerns about the fact that only 4 were drafted, so that does bring up some concerns. So those are the two that come immediately to mind without doing any deep research. I guess I'd have to throw Texas in there as well, except for the fact that I'm not quite sure if they are up to the full recruiting level, that it'll take a couple of years now that they're going to be in the SEC and might have to go up against much tougher defenses on a weekly basis than they've seen in the Big 12.
Well, Tony, let me roll this right back to you then. Mention Georgia, mention recruiting, and Georgia is where they are because they are the recruiting champs. They've out-recruited everybody the last 5 years, Alabama inclusive, and that's the reason Georgia's been the national champion and is winning the Southeast Conference. I think that's a great starting point, at least to begin. We don't know how many of those recruits they're losing. Obviously, you know, that's going to be kind of our duty or our job to keep a pulse on that. But when you're looking at prospects for the next football season here, how much do you take recruiting rankings into effect?
You look at it. I mean, you obviously know that most of these schools, the teams at the top are the teams that can afford to lose one or two players at key positions and keep it moving without being crippled. I mean, look, one of my handicapping tactics is looking, and this is in both college sports, college football and college basketball, I like to read what coaches say in the Blue Ribbon and College Hoops preseason as to whose growth that they're anticipating, or who's key guys, key glue guys that they can't anticipate being without, or you know, what the progression has been over the course of the years, and they do a fine job with that publication, and then you lose those guys for the year. So what happens, and then what has happened within the 2 or 3 games after that? Who stepped up? That kind of thing. I think that using that as a projection really helps me out. And in college football, same thing. So you look at your publication, you look at all the others that are available that I use as resources. I use yours, you do a fine job, and I'm ecstatic to be contributing to this year's. You know, the fact is we're projecting. So you got our depth charts. Our depth charts don't come out of thin air. They come out of the two deeps and the spring games and the whatnot. So immediately, and this is why I don't do anything futures-wise at all with college football, you look at what happens during spring football. I had the benefit as a student reporter at UCF to watch a program essentially grow. And I was granted access that I'm sure a lot of media was not back in my reporter days, because I used to fly on the team plane to places like Auburn and Georgia when UCF was a guarantee school, playing guarantee games and getting their brains kicked in. And Dante Culpepper grew out of that. So I got to go to 2-a-days. And I got to go into the locker room and see these guys and that is an amazingly grueling process, especially in the South and in Orlando, where the humidity is in the, it makes it feel like you're at 110, 120 degrees. And my point in this is that attrition sets in very early in college football. Your August and all of late July and into August and ultimately into September. And it is who survives that to make your coaches too deep, intact, what they envisioned, what they put on their whiteboards in May and June, in September and October. And the team that really comes out of games and whatnot, I think, is who has the supreme advantage in college football. Now the transfer portal makes that even murkier. So from the standpoint of who I project, yeah, Georgia to me is by far the favorite and should be. Ohio State, I like Will Howard a lot. Is he going to be that? The guys are going to be Devin Brown, who they've been hyping for years as C.J. Stroud's his projected guy last year before he got hurt, his replacement, and now he's got to fight off Will Howard. They've got a brand new offensive line. We've got to replace Marvin Harrison Jr. So I don't buy them at all as the number two choice as DraftKings has them. Texas, obviously, they've got some continuity in play and lost some key guys. Oregon lost some key offensive linemen, some key defenders. And I obviously am partial to Dillon Gabriel because he was UCF's quarterback there for a while. Love his accuracy. Think he'll do great and is a wonderful college quarterback. But again, there's so many pieces around him, and they lost so many key skill players. You've got LSU replacing a Heisman Trophy winner. You've got Alabama with a coaching change. You've got Michigan, coaching change. There's some continuity there. But we've talked about how they lost an amazing amount of talent to the draft. Florida State, a lot of those guys that felt slighted and should have chips on their shoulder going into this season are in the NFL now. So it's going to be a clean slate, not to mention what we talked about with the Pac-12 dispersing into other conferences and how that is going to affect the Big 12 and the ACC. So the Big 10, obviously, with the two biggies, the California schools, don't move in there. So it's an amazingly new landscape. If you put a gun to my head, I'm going to go chalk with Georgia, but let's just unfold those onion, the layers of the onion as they transpire week to week.
Well, if Georgia plays with that chip on their shoulder this year, after having not been invited to the college football playoff last year, like they displayed in their bowl game, they indeed could be somebody nobody will want to play this year.
I think some really good, before we wrap up in a sure. little bit, some guys to keep an eye on, that, again, if you want to look for long shots. I really like the quarterback transfer, the kid Quinn from Toledo to Baylor. That was their real big weakness last year, was Baylor at quarterback. And this kid Finn was an electrifying player in the MAC. We know how good Toledo has been the last couple of years, so I think that's going to be significant. I'm just a big Grayson McCall fan. I think he's got big pro potential. He gets an opportunity now to play in the ACC with NC State. Dave Dorn's done a really good job there. Now he's got a difference maker at quarterback.
Is that like his sixth year? Is this sixth or seventh year for Grayson McCall, Greg? He's
been around about a long seven, time. But six might be about right. Miami. Look, I still believe that Orgeron is going to do. Miami's coach.
Marco Cristobal.
That he's going to do a really good job because he's just a tremendous recruiter. And because of that, I think that now he's able to get Cam Ward, one of the more exciting quarterbacks that nobody really has heard of outside the big schools, because he didn't go to Washington. He went to Washington State. They get Martinez, the running back from Oregon State. You know he's going to recruit well, so I think they could be interesting. Riley Leonard going to Notre Dame. If he could just stay healthy, that is a big addition to the program. I think they're about 25-1. And then the one player that I think might be a sleeper, even though he shouldn't be, because he's not a quarterback going to Ohio State, is Judkins. I know you're a big fan of Judkins, Mark, and now he gets to play at Ohio State.
Yeah, I played him on a future to win rushing yards last year, and he still has that potential. I think it's a big, big pickup by the Buckeyes.
Just one quick thing to highlight what this transfer portal looks like. I'm impartial in almost every sport. And I'm impartial in college football too, because the team I'm with is whoever I have money on. But obviously, I am a UCF fan. So I'm looking at this, and it, the transfer portal becomes like Christmas in May right now. I got Ja'Cory Brown coming in from Miami because he needed to transfer out because he didn't win that spot there, but he was a five-star. Penny Boone, running back at Toledo, All-Mac, he's coming to UCF. Jacoby Jones, a wide receiver, 1 year of eligibility left, he's coming. And you have these situations across the country where guys that don't like what their outlook was exiting spring football suddenly say, you know what, I'm going this place. And that is going to be the shuffle over the next couple of months that's going to throw even a further wrench into things as we prepare for the season.
Let me wrap this up. Go ahead, Andy. I was just going to mention something. Interesting conference this year will be the Big 12 with no Texas or Oklahoma. So you wonder who is going to rise to the top. Well, perhaps the most consistent program over the last decade and a half, almost 20 years, have been Oklahoma State with Gundy. I think Kansas State and Kansas are also well positioned to perhaps move into the upper tier of teams over the next few years. Both are well coached, and I think that there's enough talent on those teams. So you might find some value as far as national championship odds with a team like in Oklahoma State, because whoever you happen to like in that conference, they don't have the Texas and the Oklahoma to wonder about this year.
That's a great point. Yeah.
And no, by the way, they're going to have two guys that are going to be high draft picks when they come out. Ollie Gordon, the running back, and Oliver, the defensive lineman. Those are two big-time talents that maybe you hit it right there, Andy. Take a look at Oklahoma State. If they get good quarterback play, they've got one of the best running backs in the nation, and they've got a very good defensive lineman.
So to wrap this up before we go over to the NFL side of things, guys, I think the point I want to make to our listeners and our viewers out there is we talked a lot about experience. We talked a lot about returning production. We talked about college football recruiting rankings. These are all the three main tools that I use almost exclusively throughout the first month of the college football season. Because what you do is you let all that come together, you wrap it all up, you let it come together, and then after September, you see what you've got, whether or not it did come to fruition, or if it didn't, why not? So everything we're talking about here, use that as a guide to help you get out of the blocks strong in September. That's my message.
And don't forget, playoffs.
Yes. Oh, the college football playoffs. Yeah, we'll hit on that. Okay. Yeah.
That makes it even more susceptible to upsets and not so easy for the better teams because they just had to play one game and they're in the championship, you know? So
exactly right.
Be a little bit
exactly
more difficult.
Right. Yep, exactly.
Which, by the way, brings up the expanded playoff format, meaning that you might find some very good future odds if you've got, and I don't have the schedule in front of me, two heavyweight teams meeting early in September like we often see. The loser of that team may still end up having a very good season, be able to work its way back with the expanded playoffs. They may all of a sudden go from, let's say, 15 or 18 to 1 to 25 or 30 to 1 because they lost an early season game and they've got to overcome a lot of teams to move back up. But with the additional spots available, that could be worth a play if you keep an eye in September.
The jig is up for one of you guys. Sorry.
Yeah, they're coming after one of you guys. I don't know who.
And look, it's also going to be, as Andy said, because maybe you take advantage of it this year before any other year and everybody catches up. Because if you do lose, let's say, one of those games, most likely the odds get bloated. You don't have a chance. Now, the odds won't get bloated as much, but I just will be very interested to see when a team loses, like a team that you think has a shot, but they may not be Georgia or Ohio State, and they lose, how far do their odds drop now that there's more opportunity to get back into the playoffs?
Yeah, one such game is actually going to be here in Vegas over Labor Day weekend, and I don't know that you would consider either of them a title contender, although LSU is highly ranked. They're going to play USC to start the season. So one of those teams will start the season with that loss, and they might drop considerably down. They're both going to be highly ranked, LSU especially, but should LSU, for example, lose, they still have an opportunity to make it back up, even though it's going to be, even though they play in the what will be even tougher SEC this year.
So the biggest question I have to that point, Andy, is I like to pair conferences in my database and see how conferences fare against other conferences. We're going to have the SEC playing the Big Ten, okay?
Yeah.
So is it really a Big Ten team that I'm looking at right. And factoring in?
What if it's like Texas against USC and you say, well, it's an SEC team versus a Big Ten team. Wait a second. I thought they were Big 12 versus Pac-12 last year.
The problem with that kind of analysis overall, and again, it relates to the transfer portal that you have if you go conference by conference, the composition of a team, let's say when a guy comes in as a freshman to Texas, forget the fact that they're moving to the SEC, but he'll be on a team that is extremely different than, let's say, a decade or so by the time he's ready to graduate if he stays at Texas. So the composition of the teams within the conference, it was about a decade ago when we saw the last significant overhaul of conferences. I think, I don't remember, like 30-35% of conference affiliations changed within about a four-year period, and we're seeing something like that now. So I understand, and I used to use it a lot, especially in college basketball, but it's a lot less meaningful now, I believe, unless you make some accommodations for the fact that, hey, you only want to include, let's say, Big Tens. You want to eliminate teams that were in the Big Ten, say, in 2009, that have not been here since, let's say, the 2014 season, depending on how far you go back.
And you can have a three-loss team in the SEC make the playoffs this year. And I don't think anybody would be probably too upset about it because, again, the schedule is going to be murderous.
Love talking college football. I know that. That's for sure. We could probably talk another hour. And they just got finished with their spring game. So
don't encourage us.
Is it 2024 already?
Okay, guys, let's get over to the National Football League side of things, and let's take a quick preview look at what perhaps we might be considering in this offseason before we get to the 2024 season here. And I'm going to lay the groundwork once again here with a couple of opinions or thoughts, and I'll pass it off to everybody else here. My first thought is this, and it's probably something that everybody knows, but I think it needs to be said, that it has to go down in National Football League history as the worst trade ever made. The Cleveland Browns for Deshaun Watson. Look at the cost.
Excuse me, Mark. Is that worse than the Herschel Walker trade?
Well, is from a financial standpoint. Well, let me put you this way, Andy. From a Cleveland Browns fan standpoint, okay?
Definitely, yes.
Yes.
But I mean, because of the way things are turning out and things are happening, but that Herschel Walker trade, was a significant trade as well back in, 88, 89, whenever it was.
So here's what the Browns did. In 2022, they gave up a first and a fourth round pick. Last year, they gave up a first and a third round pick. This year, they gave up a first and a third round pick. And they signed this kid to an absolutely massive, fully guaranteed contract. And it's absolutely destroyed the morale of the football team here. And that's not to say what they did to the Houston Texans and put them on the map. They benefited from all these trades and all these draft picks. And you see what Houston's done the last 2 years, and they're going to continue to keep building because of the stupidity of a trade like that. Now, Watson may end up having a great career, and he could end up taking the Browns, deep into the playoffs. And so, but he's supposed to do that, when he's being paid, he's supposed to do that. I just wanted to say that it was, to me, it's the worst trade in the National Football League history. Number two, no team in the National Football League collapsed worse last year than the Jacksonville Jaguars. They were 9-8 at a point. We saw when Trevor Lawrence got hurt, and they just completely.
How about Philadelphia?
Well, I might say even how about Miami? Okay, also okay. Yeah. Down the stretch, remember Miami's 5-1 through week six. They were averaging 500 yards a game. And what did they do? They go 2-4 out. They average 339 yards a game, 1-5 straight up and against the spread against the – or 1-6, I should say, Stuats against fellow playoff teams they met last year. They were absolutely a name and reputation type team. The only reason I'm calling this out, guys, is these are teams that like Miami, Jacksonville, Philadelphia, that have egg on their face coming into this football season here. And you might want to watch them closely in the offseason here because I think they're going to be doing things to improve or turn that situation around. And my last note of interest before I hand it off to the guys here is you're taking a look at the L.A. Chargers, and we talked about them on the NFL draft and the job that Jim Harbaugh has done before in the past. And if you look at the Chargers, the last three coaching hires they've had have all had one thing in common. Can anybody out there tell me what that one thing in common the Chargers' last three head coaches have had in common?
First thing that comes to mind is maybe no prior NFL head coaching experience or maybe even assistant coaching experience.
Exactly. None of them had ever been a head coach. Now they've got Jim Harbaugh, who's not only a head coach, he's been a National Football League head coach.
He's been to a Super Bowl.
Yes, exactly right. So, you've got Kansas City here that's going to be playing for a three-peat, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on Kansas City this football season here. If they don't win the AFC West, I'm going to go on record and saying the LA Chargers will. That's how I wanted to set the table here, guys. But Let's start it off, Tony, here. What's your thought here on the upcoming NFL football season? What are your first takes on the 2024 season?
All right, let me unmute myself because I'm typing. I mean, look, I think that the NFC North is the best division, most competitive, and that replaces the AFC East because I believe that the Jets still have an uphill climb to see what they actually have with Rodgers going. I absolutely could join that fray with Miami and Buffalo. And I think Buffalo obviously takes a step backward, and the Patriots are in a rebuilding year. But in the NFC North, you've got four teams that you have to worry about. And they'll all go at one another, and their fan bases are all passionate about hating one another. So looking forward to see how that shakes out. Looking forward to see who ends up as Minnesota's quarterback. Is it going to be a rookie right out of the gate, or will they go with a stopgap in Zach Wilson? Not Zach Wilson, because he's in Denver. The guy that they have there from last year.
Sam Darnold or?
Mullins, and then they also have him, Sam Darnold, absolutely. And so from that standpoint, you've got the Bears, and then you've got the two teams that we've seen succeed in the postseason in Detroit and Green Bay. So so much really remains to be seen. I like what Philadelphia did, and I think that because of the way last season ended, they're going to come out of the gates fast, and from the standpoint of taking every game seriously. But how do you replace a Jason Kelce? Their brotherly shove no longer going to be as effective as it has been. I think we can all agree that that's going to be the case. Will Jacksonville return to the form that we expected from them last season, now that they've got a Gabriel Davis to help Trevor Lawrence? And will Lawrence take that step forward, which is in him? There's no question it is, but he's been a disappointment. There's no way to sugarcoat that. Houston, is there a slump for CJ Stroud in store, or is he just going to hit the ground running? How healthy is Tank Dell coming back from his injury? He got shot in Orlando the other night, which is ridiculous. A little 16-year-old shot up an unsanctioned party. Thankfully, everybody got out unscathed, and Dell's going to be fine. But look, you're in a situation where, yes, the Chiefs are the favorite. I think they'll be stronger probably. But it's anybody's game. Again, you probably got 12 to 15 teams that feel good about where they are in terms of competing for a Super Bowl. And then you've got another 10 wanting to take that step forward. So really very few teams that go into it knowing that they have no chance, and knowing, like in Arizona or like in New England, that they're going to have to build and not get too excited or ahead of themselves this season. So, again, it's May. It's May 1st. Happy May, everybody. But, I take everything I say about football with a grain of salt. But there are things to take to be excited about.
Greg, let me, before I hand this off to you, Tony brought out a point and sort of kindled a piece of interest with me about the Deshaun Watson Houston trade. And the last time I looked, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, on this, the Houston Texans right now are a lower favorite to make the Super Bowl than are the Cleveland Browns.
Considerably. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So that Houston little program up. And it's not to say the Browns are devoid of talent. I mean, they weren't allowed or able to make moves in the football draft because they were handcuffed. They still did be talented football team here. So
they
this
are.
Is more or less an exclamation. I'm sorry?
No, they are, Mark. And that's why I'm shocked that they're 40-1 to win the Super Bowl. Just shocked. I mean,
well, I think there's a ton of money.
And I'm going to just disagree slightly with what Tony said as far as the best division in football last year. I think you'd have to give strong consideration to the AFC North as opposed to the AFC East. All four teams in that division finished with winning records, which is, I saw the stat. Well, it's the first time since 1934 that all teams in the division, that the last place team in a division had a winning record. Well, of course, back then you had 7-8 team divisions when you just had East and West and all that. But in the era of four division teams, Cincinnati, with the injuries to Burrow and all, 9-8. You had 10-7 with Pittsburgh, 11-6 with Cleveland, and Baltimore 13-4. And of course, remember, what's important about that is these teams each play six games against their other division rivals, so they accumulated a lot of wins in their non-division play. I think Cleveland still has as much talent, but they're also in what was last year and could again this year be the best, and by that I also mean most balanced division. And you know, if you got a last place team with a winning record, that speaks to balance.
I agree with that. Greg, I know you're a big value player. You look for value. You mentioned the Cleveland Browns being 40-1. Any other plays that you're looking at in the National Football League that look mighty appealing to Greg DePalma right now?
Well, if I use the strategy of going through, say, futures right now, then I might say, well, I don't think I'm going to get much of a break for teams that I would like Detroit, Cincinnati, 12-1, 13-1. That probably won't move, so why would I put money on it now? But I definitely would like those teams in September. So where else would I go? Well, it starts with the Eagles and the Packers, because now the Eagles get to come back after a disappointing season. They still have a loaded roster and a better assortment of assistant coaches, which hurt them last year. Green Bay, I mean, how do you look at what they did last year in outplaying San Francisco and losing that game and not thinking that they're going to be better this year? And then with the higher teams like Cleveland, you got the Chargers with Herbert and a coaching staff at 30-1. You have the Rams getting disrespected at 35-1. We talked about Cleveland. And then if you want to go even further than that, I mean, how many times are people going to disrespect the Steelers at 60-1? Seattle's at 75-1, and they've got a really good roster and a new coaching staff. So I think those are the teams that I would be looking at early before those odds drop, because I can't imagine Cleveland won't go off somewhere around 25-1 when it's all said and done. So I'd jump all over Cleveland, the Chargers, the Rams, Jacksonville 45-1, Pittsburgh, Seattle. I think those are all realistic teams that have a shot to win the Super Bowl. And I'm not just throwing money away, like, say, Tampa Bay. I like the story of Tampa Bay, but they're not going to win a Super Bowl, even though they're 75-1. So I think you do have to be a little bit realistic. But, yeah, I think those are the teams that and what's the fun is that there's a lot of – but with the Chiefs winning back-to-back Super Bowls, the chances of them winning a third are just a lot smaller. It just doesn't happen. San Francisco is going to potentially have the old lose Super Bowl, have a bad next season deal. So that opens things up tremendously for all these other teams to have a realistic shot.
Well, I wish Jim Feist were with us, and Jim couldn't make it, guys, on the show. He has family matters that he's attending to, and obviously Victor King, he's been off for the summer here, also attending to some family matters, and everybody will be back intact in July, Victor, Jim, and the crew here today for our next Against the Spread podcast, as we do just that. But I would be interested to know what Jim's take on the National Football League would be. I know Jim's maybe not so much of a futures player as he is what's going on here today. But we'll catch up with him in July to find out his take on everything that's going on. Andy, your take, you can wrap it up here and close it out here on the National Football League side of things. What is going to catch or what has caught your interest thus far?
Well, as I talked about during our discussion on the draft, I like the Chargers. I like their odds at 30-1. I will admit up front, right after the Super Bowl, within minutes of the Super Bowl landing, I did play Kansas City to get that three-peat, simply because those odds were never going to be better than the 9-1 that they were listed at, I believe was at circa within 15 minutes of the completion of the Super Bowl. But I think if there's a team that can challenge them, I like all the changes that they've made. We talked about their draft. I like the Chargers at 30-1. Now, I've not made any other plays yet other than those two. But the thing to keep in mind is, and that's where another few weeks we'll know the NFL schedule. And what I'll be looking at, you want to take a look at the sequencing of the games. I want to take a look at the quality teams that have a very difficult first five or six games, might end up, say, 4-2, possibly even 3-3, but let's say 4-2, and those are teams whose odds might drop by the time we get to the middle of October. They might be 11-1 now. They might be 18-1 because they're 4-2, and that, you know, may put them out of the possibility of winning their division and getting a playoff bye, even though at that point there'll still be 11 games remaining. So, I mean, you take a look. I'm looking at the Westgate right now, and you see odds 49ers 9-2, Ravens 8-1, Chiefs 6-1, even the Bills at 14-1. Now you may be able to get better odds because you might find a reason to like several of the teams that have a chance once you get into October, and the odds are a lot generous. As I say, the Chargers are 30-1 now. I don't know that they're going to be any lower, but I'd be happy to take 30-1, which I was. The other thing to keep in mind, or that I'm looking at, teams like Buffalo. All that playoff experience and the disappointing results, I wonder if they might not be due for a bit of a decline this year. And a lot of that has to do with Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets. Now, that's only two games, but it's two games. And, of course, I think the team split last year when the Jets actually came back on that Monday night when Rodgers was injured and they won in overtime in that game. But those extra games over the course of 4 or 5 years take an awful big toll on a lot of teams. And that's why we see very often a lot of these teams all of a sudden go into somewhat of a decline. The ones that don't are the ones that make a lot of changes while they're in that period of excellence, like a team we've seen Kansas City under. Look, they traded away the best receiver in football, and here they are back in the playoffs every year. Now they've got some personnel changes from last year as well. So my thoughts right now, the best value out there for me was the Chargers, but there may be other good values. We'll have a little bit of a better idea. I'll have a little bit of a better idea once the schedule is out and we get to chart the course for all 32 teams as far as the easy, the difficult, you know, the road trips, et cetera, consecutive division games, et cetera, all of which we'll be able to do. We know all the opponents, home and road. We don't know the sequencing until that schedule comes out, and that's when I start to think seriously about NFL future plays as far as multiple teams and be prepared for the early part of the season as to decide when to get on when to get in on those teams.
Well, that's when we'll be checking the boxes, guys. And this has been a great little overview, preview, if you will, from the college football draft to the National Football League 2024 season here. Also, I want to remind listeners out there, Prime Sports Network, Greg does a terrific horse racing show amongst a bunch of other things that he does. But it's Kentucky Derby week, guys, and you're going to want to check out Greg's Kentucky Derby show with John Hardoon and Chad Summers. Excellent handicapper, excellent trainer. Check that out on the Prime Sports Network. You can do that on YouTube. Any other way that they can view that, Greg?
Yeah, we'll actually stream it out, so you can get it on cool. Apple and all those other streaming services. And cool. We have a new horse racing channel, Horsepower PSN, so they could check that out directly. And you can get a link on that on the bottom of the Prime Sports Network website channel.
Cool. Well, guys, this has been brought to you by uwager.lv, as you mentioned, featuring 5% rebates, monthly rebates to their customers. Check it out at uwager.lv or call them toll free at 1-800-UWAGER. And once again, if you like what we're doing, hit the like button down below. And if you have any questions or comments, hit the subscribe button and we'll be glad to answer and get back with you. So for Andy Isco from TheLogicalApproach.com, Tony Mejia, playbook experts and sporting news contributing writer, Greg DePalma, producer of Prime Sports Network, Jim Feist, Victor King, this is Mark Lawrence until July. Reminding you to always remember to bet with your head, not over it. And good luck as always.